Hey guys, welcome back to Even More News, the first and honestly the only news podcast. My name, you guessed it, it's Katie Stoll.
Thank you for your honesty about how many news podcasts there are and ever have been. I'm Cody.
Hi, Cody. And then joining us today, our worst year ever co-host, you might have already guessed it. Introduce yourself.
I'm Robert Evans, and I continue to be just amazed that no one else has ever thought of making a news podcast.
It is shocking.
Especially not the three of us.
Yeah, why haven't we ever done that?
Than this one. Yeah, we should.
Oh, we should. We should.
We've always talked about it. I feel like people would really respond to that.
Yeah, there's still a possibility. Like, there's nothing stopping us.
You're right. And we could call it Pretty Good Year. Yeah. Podcast.
A pretty good year sounds great to me.
Yeah,
or like,
nailing it.
How's it going, everybody? Question mark. And then, yeah. Good.
Yeah, there we go. The whole podcast can just be us calling different people who tell us that things are just fine.
And we believe them and we don't dig any deeper.
Before we talk about the news, I want to take a moment to wish everybody a very happy National Day of Prayer and National Day of Reason. It's yin and yang. It's just it's right there. I don't want to get too far into that because I don't want to offend anybody, no matter what you believe. But happy National Day of Prayer to some of you and happy National Day of Reason to others.
I'm going to be honest. The only prayer that I recognize is a good old fashioned fist fight. That's my religion.
Whatever it is that you worship.
Yeah. When hands really come together.
Yeah.
And changing the subject once again, hello, hi, it's this part of the show, the Skillshare part, because hello again, thanks to Skillshare for supporting Even More News. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for our listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare premium membership for free at skillshare.com/news. Okay, so yes, we are obviously joined with our dear friend Robert today, and we all talk and record with Robert quite a lot. Several times a week, actually.
We sure do.
But I don't know that we have ever recorded an honest conversation about how you are doing, Robert. You know, just a quick check-in with whatever you want to share about what this has been bringing up for you.
Man, you know, it's weird because I feel like I was in the, as a number of people have pointed out, I've been warning about aspects of like what's happened this year for a while now. You know, I did a whole podcast series on some of it more than a year ago. I was yelling about the dangers of a virus going uncontrolled in the United States and primarily spreading through vectors of like service industry workers who can't afford to take. I'm stocked up on food and I have more ammunition than maybe a person should have. I have enough weaponry to outfit, you know, a dozen-ish fighters. And it's still bullshit. I fucking hate this. Like it's one of those things where starting about 18 months ago when, you know, the money started to come in from my podcast, I started preparing, like I've always kept a small stockpile, but I started getting ready in earnest just because things seem to keep getting worse. And none of that makes it suck less that things are getting worse. And I have less faith every day that, I read a really good book the other day. A good friend of mine who was raised in the Quiverful community, which is a hardcore evangelical Christian fascist community, is kind of how I would describe it. Like they see children as like arrows in a quiver. That's where the name comes from. It's from a verse in the Bible. And like the whole idea is you breed as many kids as possible so they can take over American society, become judges and law people and whatever and politicians and essentially strip everyone else of their rights to be anything but a specific sort of Christian. That's the idea behind. So she came out of this and like escaped from this cult basically that is in the process of eating all of the U.S. government. You know, they've been very effective. She sent me a book by Octavia Butler called The Parable of the Sower. And it's a near future kind of quasi apocalyptic book. But it's, you know, it's an apocalypse that looks a lot like where we are today. It's set actually starts in about 2024. And it's like it starts with a community in suburban Los Angeles that has a wall. And because they have a wall, you know, they're able to defend themselves from the fact that street violence becomes uncontrollable, becomes impossible to travel around unless you have the wealth to hire armed guards, and like there's no jobs, and an increasing, like they stop, you know, school stops being something that like just happens. So like people aren't educated, no one can read. And I'm like watching, you know, even people like Cuomo start like toying with the idea of, well, like, what if we didn't stop requiring schools the way we have and just have online course? And that's kind of how this all starts. And it's, you know, this Octavia Butler was the first really prominent black female science fiction writer who was like successful in American, in the U.S. publishing industry, I guess. And she was writing all this. It was years and years ago. The second book, I think, or she died in 2006. So like this is very pre-Trump. And the second book in the series deals with, as like American society is collapsing and like the rich have isolated themselves into these islands and the government has started, like, reacted to outrageous homelessness by like stripping worker protections and allowing companies to essentially treat workers as slaves in exchange for putting them up with room and board. It deals in the second book with the rise of this this fascist Christian presidential candidate whose campaign slogan is "Make America Great Again."
Oh my God!
Yeah. So I'm reading all this.
I hate that.
And yeah, the book deals with a lot of the stuff we've talked about, like in our prepping episode, like this very intelligent young girl realizes what's coming and starts like learning how to forage and like training with arms and like, you know, preparing to like take care of herself and get out of the worst part affected parts of the country and try to build something new. And it's just, I don't know. It sounds like some nice light escapism. I have no faith that the worst people in the country are going to stop being the worst people in the country. It's and they want about a third of the country dead.
Yeah. We're going to dig into all of those claims throughout this episode. Know. But yeah, it's really overwhelming sometimes when I think about it big picture. Yeah. I might have a good day, you know, or a good week, you know, but some weeks are better than others. Also, it's a side note. I keep thinking like, hey, I'm finally hitting my stride. And then something happens and I'm like, oh, no, it's awful. But then, but in a day-to-day basis, what really gets me is thinking about long-term how we're going to get out of this when the leadership is just not there. And we'll talk about this also throughout the episode. But the United States is the place where people should be turning to throughout the world for leadership right now, not just in our country, but throughout the world in finding, you know, a vaccine, at least, you know, it's daunting. It's daunting to look at,
you know, but we chose not to be. And we didn't make that decision under Donald Trump. We really, really made that call for in a final way under Barack Obama. I firmly believe that our decision to ignore most of what was happening in Syria, to let the massacre of between half a million and a million people occur, to let like the refugee crisis it's kicked up has been a huge fuel behind like the rise of this incipient fascist movement that we're dealing with around the world. Like that is when we said
we're not leaders.
Not that we're not leaders, that it's foolish and dangerous of us to do anything but look within our own borders. And when you make that call, you have said, I am only going to accept that things will get worse. That's what that means. Yeah,
I hear that. And that's a really good point. I mean, I would say under Donald Trump specifically, we see deregulation and the gutting of the CDC and, you know, rolling back just of norms of a denial of science that has certainly left us specifically unprepared to step into any sort of leadership role and taking point on this. But that kind of leads us to the news of the week. And I wanted to start by talking about this Wuhan conspiracy because it's been bugging me for weeks and been wanting to talk about it. But there's a lot of stuff to talk about. But, I'm talking about this conspiracy and the theories being floated as to how the virus originated, whether or not it was man-made, you know, or if it escaped from a lab. I love that kind of phrasing, like it's some sort of monster movie. But we're seeing that more and more from this administration kind of painting this whole situation as something insidious.
I was going to say, at least it's only coming from people on the fringe.
Yes, at least it's only... Oh, wait, hold on a second. This is from The Guardian. On Sunday, Mike Pompeo said, there is enormous evidence that that's where this began. Later adding, I can tell you that there is a significant amount of evidence that this came from that laboratory in Wuhan. At one point, the Secretary of State appeared confused over whether he was claiming SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes the COVID-19 disease, was deliberately engineered or escaped as a result of a lab accident. Quote, look, the best experts so far seem to think it's man-made. I have no reason to disbelieve that at this point. But when he was reminded that U.S. intelligence had issued a formal statement noting the opposite, that the scientific consensus was that the virus is not man-made or genetically modified, Pompeo replied, that's right, I agree with that. Donald Trump made a similar unsupported claim on Thursday, saying he was privy to evidence of the pandemic beginning in a Chinese lab, but was not permitted to share it.
Yeah, so, I love when he talks like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
I've heard rumblings, but I won't say anything else. Unbelievable.
You know, yeah. I'm hearing whispers that it's possible, you know, it could have originated there. It's just, I mean, this is a blatant, putting out this talking point, putting out this theory to just distract people, shift anger at someone other than his administration. That's been very blatant from the beginning, but it's very important to remind everybody that experts all seem to agree that this was not a man-made virus.
But also, there's nothing that matters less than an expert's opinion in the United States.
Even Dr. Anthony Fauci's?
it couldn't be less important. All that matters is what a lot of people with guns believe and are willing to scream about into a camera.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter that they've shown absolutely zero evidence to support this theory. The World Health Organization, their emergencies director, Michael Ryan, said this. So from our perspective, this remains speculative. Like any evidence-based organization, we would be very willing to receive any information that purports to the origin of the virus. But, you know, right now, they don't have it. The White House, so we're claiming it. We're not even showing it to the World Health Organization. I mean, if they have evidence of it, if they have actual evidence, why would they keep that a secret?
And then hint at it, you know? Like a, what's the term? A game show.
It's a little on the nose for the guy who finally brings this country down to be a game show host, right? Like that.
Isn't it?
Like a little on the nose.
Yeah, we've been playing with it a lot, but
I'm frustrated. Yeah.
We jumped the shark several
times. I have notes, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. We need to introduce the concept of subtlety. But I want to talk about this just a little bit more, because if we're going to be fair, there is a possibility that the virus, you know, escaped from the lab in some sort of an accident. You know, that's not to say that it was a man-made virus, but there is a world where it did. Last week, The Washington Post reported about diplomatic cables that were sent to the White House in 2018, warning about the Wuhan lab specifically, citing mismanagement and safety concerns. That's in 2018. I believe this is from the BBC. The Washington Post newspaper reported information obtained from diplomatic cables on 14th of April. They showed that in 2018, U.S. science diplomats were sent on repeated visits to a Chinese research facility. Officials sent two warnings to Washington about the lab. Column says the officials were worried about safety and management weaknesses at Wuhan Institute of Virology. It also claims diplomats were concerned the lab's research on bat coronaviruses could risk a new SARS-like pandemic. So, okay, the White House knew about the threat that this lab posed. They knew about it and they didn't take any action. That's coupled with all the stuff we talked about up top, you know, with the CDC and everything. And that's alarming in and of itself. But from what I can tell, this is the only evidence that they have. And it's a compelling case for at least investigating this. But there's also evidence suggesting the otherwise. This is actually from 538. The virus's spike has a hinge-like structure, allowing the spike to change shape as the virus enters the host cell. Like the spike tip, the hinge on SARS-CoV-2 is markedly different from anything seen in its close relatives. New research suggests that the hinge loses its unique characteristics when cultured in a lab.
So if it were from a lab, it would be different.
There's compelling evidence to suggest that. Yeah. You know, and so that is all just to say that we don't know, and it's worth looking into the origins of how it started. But regardless, this whole hullabaloo and painting China as some sort of boogeyman is a blatant way to distract from the things that they did, what they fucked up with. Because it's unquestioned that China didn't handle this well at the beginning, but neither did we. Neither did we at any point along the way. And what they're also kind of doing is framing this or hinting at it that there was some sort of insidious reason. This is another fun quote from Trump. Whether they, China, made a mistake or whether it started off as a mistake and then they made another one, or did somebody do something on purpose? I don't understand how traffic, how people weren't allowed into the rest of China, but they were allowed into the rest of the world. That's bad. That's a hard question for them to answer. That's what I mean. Like, they're trying to paint this as something bigger to pin blame on.
Yeah, like they always do about literally everything.
Yep. And it will. This is the way things are now. It will work for the people who have decided that they're on Trump's side, and it won't work for the people who haven't. And the people in the middle will.
Right.
It's kind of impossible to guess. I have no idea how they'll take this. At the end of the day, the problem is so much larger than any individual lie, and it's the fact that truth doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And anyone who thinks it is living in a past that is functionally as distant from us now as it the time of the dinosaurs. Like, that doesn't matter anymore. Facts don't matter. Truth doesn't matter. What matters is taking power and stopping others from taking power. There's nothing else that can save us at this point but taking power away from these people. That's what has to happen. And I don't know how to do that, but I know that the reality of this situation of like how the coronavirus started doesn't matter. What matters is stopping as many people as possible from believing whatever bullshit the president and his people put out.
It's hard because just the vague possibility of it originating in a lab is enough for people to go full in leaning into some people. You know, they don't need evidence. They just need the suspicion of it for their minds to be made up. And then we see increased acts of racist sentiment. I mean, the whole thing is, this is another point I wanted to make, and I'm not the first one to make it, but I'm sharing it here. Okay, so if there was a lab accident in Wuhan, maybe they scrambled and tried to fix their mistakes and figure out what happened, you know, maybe there was some sort of cover up on a local level, maybe something like that. But the idea, and this is specifically an example I've heard, it's like if there was a lab accident in Atlanta, and which happens a lot, actually, you know, there have been times when viruses have escaped from the Atlanta CDC. It's like if this had happened there, and then the whole United States, they're the ones that did it. You know what I mean? Like, it's different than saying the Chinese government purposefully, somehow insidiously let it come to America. Why? To cause a global financial disaster?
Yeah.
That checks out.
I mean, yeah, it none of it makes any sense. I just feel like if like they've decided they want to believe that China is responsible. I spent a lot of time looking at polling numbers, and I really think that no matter what happens, this is going to wind up being almost the same as shit broke out in like 2016, you know? And that doesn't mean that Trump is definitely going to win, because Hillary came pretty close. Like, if a couple of things flipped, she very well could have won. It all comes down to a few tens of thousands of people. But like, this won't go away. If Trump is kicked out of office, this is the new nine.
Right.
This is the new loose change, the new like September 11th style conspiracy theory. And it will merge and breed with all of the other conspiracy theories and the QAnon stuff. And this is like conspiracy is the dominant religion in the United States. And all you have to do, you know, we had
happy
that
day
fun
of worship. Oh, no,
yeah.
Happy National Day of Prayer.
We had that
to
fun
our conspiracy
episode
theorists
where we read the Flat Earth book and we talked about an egregore, right? And an egregore is a god that you basically imagine into being. A group of people believes enough and it creates this thing. I've never felt more like the occult was fucking onto something, whatever branch of it came up with that idea, because that's what these are. These are, and I don't even think these are separate egregores. I think QAnon and the fucking Plandemic conspiracy theory and the China Made It conspiracy theory and the vast pedophile conspiracy, all these different fucking Pizzagate conspiracy theories and conspiracy theories of, like, They have been gestating since fucking Kennedy was shot, and that conspiracy theory started to really, like, bleed and merge with alien conspiracy. And it's all this, that, like, conspiracy is the religion of America in the 21st century. And there's almost a degree which left and right doesn't matter, because there's a lot of the people who are conspiracy worshipers and happen to be left wing or happen to be right wing, believe a lot of the same things still. They just interpret them differently. I don't know. I know I keep leading us off into a tangent here, but I can't stop thinking about it, because if we, like, this is the thing that has to be solved. Like, we have to kill this egregore. And the only way to kill it is to stop. You know, it's like that episode of The Simpsons where all of the fucking mascots come alive and they have to start ignoring them until they die. But how do you stop people from ignoring this shit? How do you, I just,
yeah,
that's the question we have to answer.
I don't know if we can.
That might be the bad answer.
I'll wrap up this fun segment with one of China's responses, titled "Evil Pompeo Was Wantonly Spewing Poison and Spreading Lies." What does this document say? "These flawed and unreasonable remarks by American politicians make it clear to more and more people that no evidence exists," the commentary said. "The so-called virus leaked from a Wuhan lab hype is a complete and utter lie. American politicians are rushing to shift the blame, cheat votes, and suppress China when their own domestic anti-epidemic efforts are a mess," it added. Two further commentaries published on Monday by state newspaper People's Daily attacked Pompeo and former White House strategist Steve Bannon as a pair of lying clowns, and blasted Bannon as a Cold War living fossil.
I can't get over how much, like, Donald Trump wrote that and gave it to them, and he's like say this, like, it's the same, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's wild to be living in a time with no leadership, I'll say that. All right, we're gonna take a really quick break for an ad, and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk about more really I would say uplifting news.
So no change of pace. Still uplifting.
No, yeah.
Hi, it's this part now. The other Skillshare part. The how bored are you? How much have you wanted to learn a new skill but were like, but I'm stuck at home for weeks part? Well, hey, hi. If you do want to learn some new skills to deepen your existing passions and to get lost in creativity, maybe try Skillshare, maybe. An online learning community where millions come together to take the next step in their creative journey, with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people on topics including illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, and more. The classes are $10 a month and are designed for real life and creative endeavors. Without Skillshare's animation class on a plugin called Duik, we never would have been introduced to brave heroes like Snoofle Doofle or Professor Seeds von Greasy, and all future mascots that look and move in eerily similar ways to each other. One class I look forward to taking is Simple Productivity, How to Accomplish More with Less, right after I find a class called How Not to Procrastinate, you dink. Get to it, buddy. Anyway, the classes are very streamlined and helpful, easy to use. The videos and teachers I've seen have been great, which is why Skillshare is a proud sponsor of Even More News. That's this show. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/news and get 2 free months of premium membership. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to skillshare.com/news. That's skillshare.com/news.
That's skillshare.com/news. And we are back for even more news. So cool. Yes.
From outer space.
I wanted to talk about that LA Times article, as some of you may have seen from earlier this week. The one with the very alarming headline, a mutant coronavirus has emerged, even more contagious than the original study says. So they ultimately changed that headline to something less alarmist, presumably because I tweeted about it.
Thank you for your service.
Not really.
No, thank you for your service, Katie.
You are welcome for my service. First of all, the mutant strain of the coronavirus that that's emerged that they mention, it's already the one making its way around the United States. So
that's good.
Okay, well, here's a quote from the article. The new strain appeared in February in Europe, migrated quickly to the east coast of the United States, and has been the dominant strain across the world since mid-March, the scientists wrote. In addition to spreading faster, it may make people vulnerable to a second infection after a first bout with the disease, the report warned. So, okay, yes, that headline is misleading, but the story
is
alarming in its own way. but the important thing is that we're not talking about a brand new strain from what we're already dealing with, not yet.
You know, it's interesting because, like, really what the story is saying is that viruses mutate and change, and the one that's hitting that's so deadly that fucked up Italy so bad and is currently fucking our shit up so bad happened because it changed in Europe and then came here. And if logic and reason and stuff mattered, the conclusion would be, oh, that must mean that the only way to properly confront these things is with a global effort, because the virus like functions that way, and if we're actually going to like beat these things, we have to be talking to together and working with each other. But I think we'll learn something different.
I think we might. One thing that this should at least give us pause about is the fact that a lot of our studies about the virus are centered in China, right? So we're studying its evolution there. We're studying people's reemergence in the society and their reopenings and all of that. But what we're dealing with here is different. So maybe we should be looking to Europe more closely, you know, especially Germany, that seems to be doing pretty well for all of the Western nations, not to just be blindly going along with this idea that if you have antibodies that you're safe. I think that this is really important information to share with your mom that thinks she got it back in February and is ready to go to Target. You know, we just don't have that information yet. And yes, viruses mutate. But also that headline sucked.
Yeah, yeah, both can be true.
Yeah, no, that's grossly irresponsible. And why people hate the media, like a big part of it is bullshit like that. That's an incredibly reckless thing to do. And it was all for the clicks. And that makes me very
angry. We're talking about it.
And the other takeaway that maybe, I don't know, I don't want to put ideas in people's head, but maybe we shouldn't be reopening yet since there's so much we don't know about it.
Blasphemy.
Maybe.
Disgusting suggestion, Katie.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Anti-American.
I'm sorry. I'll move on.
Americans decided a long time ago that we were okay with a lot of people, other Americans, dying as long as it wasn't Muslims who killed them and as long as we were able to pretend that it wouldn't hurt us. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. So I think, the lockdown is going to be done with pretty soon here, at least in most of the country.
Speaking of that, the news broke today, yesterday, I don't know what is time, that the White House is rejecting the guidelines put out by the CDC designed to help with reopening, specifically schools, restaurants, churches, other establishments, because apparently they are too prescriptive.
Isn't that the point?
This is from the Daily Beast. Experts at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention prepared a set of detailed documents designed to do exactly that, reopening stuff. But its publication has reportedly been blocked by the White House. The Associated Press reported that the nation's top infectious disease investigators wrote a 17-page report to help faith leaders, business owners, educators, and state and local officials as they gradually reopen. It was slated to be published last week, but a CDC official told AP that the agency's scientists were told the guidance would never see the light of day. A person close to the White House's coronavirus task force told AP that White House officials didn't want to provide detailed guidance for how specific sectors can reopen. This is wild to me. Like, the idea, I guess, being, I mean, the justification, the idea is that they don't want people scared away from reopening. But the justification is that some areas, you know, less populated areas don't need to follow the same exact guidelines, you know, the same guidelines as the areas where most of our populations live.
It's almost like some sort of municipalist system with kind of a libertarian bent would be a better way of dealing with things than the kind of top-down approach that we have. But no one's ever tried such a thing or done a whole podcast about how it works called The Women's War.
That's a good title. I wonder if...
Yeah, sorry.
It's a nice plug.
Do something with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, deeply frustrating that all of this stuff... Like I'm more angry. I'm actually not even really angry anymore that the president is suppressing stuff like this report and clearly a bunch of other shit as well that we need to know, because that's what he is. You know, he's fundamentally, like, he's at his core an authoritarian, and that's what they do. I'm going to be very pissed if this doesn't get leaked out by a whole fuckload of people.
Yes.
I'm going to be very pissed if those scientists, that's the thing that will actually break my heart if this doesn't get out anyway.
Yeah. They're also apparently sitting on a study that explicitly states reopening now, as opposed to just a couple more weeks of social distancing, will cost hundreds, if not thousands, of lives.
You mean the cheapest thing in the country?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No value.
The truth is that the president doesn't care. He just doesn't care. Hopefully that won't be the case, Mr. Trump said on Wednesday when asked if deaths would rise as a result of reopening, but added, it could very well be the case.
Useless person. Cool. Why does he speak? Doesn't matter. Who cares? Why would I get mad at something he says? What's the point?
Yeah, and you know what fucks me up the most about all this is the effect I can see it having on me. Like, I read a tweet the other day, who knows if it's real, but it went pretty viral, where some woman was saying, like, hey, my husband just died of COVID-19. He was, like, hardcore MAGA, believed the virus was a scam, refused to go to the doctor. Like, our son found him dead in the bathroom because his heart stopped. And, like, he just didn't take this seriously even as he was dying from it. And my first thought was... one less of the sons of bitches. And that's a horrible thing. That's like a horrible indictment of me as a person. Yeah. But also, that's what this kind of shit does. That's what living through this does. If you don't fight really hard to make it increase your empathy, it will turn you into the people who made this happen in the first place because of your righteous hatred of them. And we should hate these sons of bitches. We should want them to... We should want that they should be punished horrifically in some cases. But if we lean into those feelings too much, if we let that be the thing that dominates us, like you've already got 30% or 40% of the country whose only desire politically is to fuck up the people who they disagree with. That's the primary motivating factor on the right, is to hurt the left. And if we let ourselves fall into that, then there's no hope. Then there's nothing left but violence. But at the same time, it's not an emotional impossibility, but it is really fucking hard to not let that happen to yourself.
Yeah, I see a lot of that resentment and contempt bubbling over. Like, we spent so many years talking about how the cruelty is the point, and without... really working to resist that, just for, like, regular people, whenever death total comes out for, like, Georgia, there's all this smug, like, we told you so. It's like, yeah, we did, but, like, come on.
Yep.
Isn't the point that, like, we're rejecting that mindset and outlook, and because that's what the situation demands of us, not just in general, but this specific situation. I think it's good to recognize when that happens and not, like, hate yourself for having that impulse, but recognize it and know that,
I think there's a degree to which we have to acknowledge these feelings. Like, there's that old Bible-y quote from the Jesus guy. That's something along the lines of, like, a man is not damned by, like, what comes into his head, but what comes out of his mouth. I don't know if that's from the Bible. I heard it a lot growing up. Don't know where it comes from, but the basic idea that, like, when you feel these things, when you have this rage coursing through you, you have to, like, acknowledge it and confront it and admit it. It doesn't mean you have to yield to it. And in fact, you have to, like, fight against it, because submitting to rage is not the way to pull out of the tailspin. But by just pushing it down inside yourself, that I think lets it metastasize. I think you have to express, like, I fucking hate a lot of these people. And there is a part of me that wants them. When I saw that fucking asshole with his dump truck pull up and honk and lift his bed up and down and talk about how he wants to be able to go have a beer, and he was hugging all these people in the crowd, there was a part of me that was like, I hope you fucking get it, you son of a bitch.
Right.
And that's not good. And it is bad that I feel that way. And the best thing would be for him to not get sick, and to also never get his way politically again, because we stop people like that from having an influence over other people. But the fact that I feel that rage towards him is natural, and it's not good, but it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's just something to be confronted and fought.
I'm going to kind of speed through the rest of this really quickly because you know what? It's all dark, and I want to get to our listener responses section. I mentioned the coronavirus task force. What's up with it right now? At first, earlier this week, it was announced that they would be winding it down. But then apparently the president was surprised by how popular it was.
Oh, my God.
Changed his mind. Said, well, I guess we'll keep it around because the people like it. Literally
I
said because it's popular.
So
not because of people dying, but again, he doesn't care.
Selective populism bullshit. And oh, my God.
I know. But now the task force is not about controlling the situation because we've clearly got it under control, guys.
Yeah, we're doing great.
Now it's about safety and reopening the economy. Speaking of the task force a little bit more, the White House is preventing members of the task force from testifying before Congress in their coronavirus oversight proceedings, calling it counterproductive. Top administration officials argue that the coronavirus task force and the primary agencies responding to the pandemic need to focus their attention and resources on response efforts, and that having them testify could use up critical hours. That's from The Hill, which raises a really interesting question. If we've got this under control and the task force was ready to be disbanded, surely they have some hours to testify.
That would require...
But no, that's not it. And the truth is came from President Trump. Of course it did. Who told reporters on Tuesday that he doesn't want officials appearing before House Democrats because the House is a setup. The House is a bunch of Trump haters. So there we go.
Someone should tell him that it's actually very popular that they testify.
Someone should tell him that. You're right. That's the way to go about it.
Actually, the people, they're very excited. They're popular. They love you if you do that.
Yeah. Let's gaslight the president. I mean, if we could really get on the same page about how to gaslight the president, that might work. He wouldn't be hard to gaslight.
Come on, Democratic establishment. Let's go. Let's get some leadership here.
It requires coordination and a singular vision and leadership. And I don't think we're up to that challenge.
Yeah. And some of us are going to have to fuck him. Some of us are going to have to fuck him. You know?
That's okay, just, Robert.
And I volunteer.
Brave.
You know?
Wow.
All right. Yeah, let's.
You jumped at that chance. Interesting.
I'm a star fucker, Cody. I've always been a star fucker.
And finally, let's talk real quick, at least, about the whistleblower. You know the whistleblower, Dr. Rick Bright. Do you not? Here, I'll tell you. This is from NBC News. A top health and human services official who says he was shoved out of a key coronavirus response job for pushing back on efforts to fund potentially dangerous drugs promoted by those with political connections filed a whistleblower complaint Tuesday, charging an abuse of authority or gross mismanagement at the agency. In his complaint, Dr. Rick Bright, who until last month was the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response and Director of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA, described a chaotic response to the virus at the Department of Health and Human Services. The chaos was fueled largely by pressure from HHS leadership to ignore scientific merit and expert recommendations and instead to award lucrative contracts based on political connections and cronyism. So basically, he was pushed out for refusing to support hydroxychloroquine.
That sounds really out of character for this administration.
You love to see it. You love to see the thing that you already knew confirmed.
You love to see it.
You love it.
I have to say, I have a little bit of respect for like the folks who are still continuing the hydroxychloroquine grift after it's like really been repeatedly shown that it's not a miracle cure. Like Laura Ingraham at least has some consistency.
What a wild ride hydroxychloroquine has been.
Yeah, it's been a fun year for hydroxychloroquine.
You know, the brightest stars burn out the quickest.
Yeah, and they get a lot of old people with heart conditions killed in medical studies. Mm-hmm. That everyone says that about the brightest stars.
But then
stars.
The stars get fucked by Robert.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, they do.
All right, enough of this dark bullshit. Let's hear some listener responses. Some of them might be dark as well. This week, we put out a prompt asking for you guys to share with us some of the things you have learned about yourself during this time. This is from Kelgore. The whole thing has radicalized me. The surrounding political issues also made me realize I should stop waiting for the government to do anything, but rather I should start helping those around me immediately. If we can all rely on each other, we need politicians a lot less. Yeah, man, I think that's right in line with what we've all been feeling and talking about over the last several weeks.
Yes, anarchism is the only solution, which we all agree about.
Helping each other, empathy, kindness. I think I'd put it like that.
Yeah, anarchism.
Anarchism. This one's from Peter Miles Hamilton. Well, his handle is Peter Miles Hamilton is doing their best. I learned that I wasn't the gender I was assigned at birth, and that the resources available for determining trans identities are severely lacking. First of all, thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
That's a huge epiphany to have had during this time. I want to put up a call. I'm not trans myself, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think, you know, if some of our listeners wanted to share with us resources that have helped them, I would love to promote those from our account, because I'm sure that you're not the only one going through this right now.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect a lot of people, just by virtue of kind of the extra time spent alone and thinking, are coming to some conclusions about themselves that maybe just they hadn't really devoted much time to. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of folks who, part of why they, you know, come out much later in life, you know, folks who sort of come out when they're like in their 30s, 40s, mm-hmm. 50s. It's less that like they were, it's not always that they were hiding it their whole lives. It's that like they always knew there was like something and something kind of that they hadn't really sorted out. But, you know, there's other shit to do, right? Like it's not the only thing to do on a given day. And so you just kind of deal with the other stuff going on. And now folks have time. So, yeah, I suspect a lot of people are realizing like, oh, maybe I'm trans. Like, maybe this explains, like, why I've been thinking this or this, or, like, why I felt this way about this. Like,
we just have a lot of time right now to be contemplative, and it makes sense that this is the time where you'd have the space to make those discoveries. This one is from Capitalism is Poop. I've learned that I'm not as suicidal as I thought, or else I wouldn't be so scared of getting COVID. I'd say that's a real positive takeaway from this.
That's a good conclusion to come to about yourself. It's good to... I think that one of the positives of times like this is that it can reveal things like that to people. Like, it's easy... Like it's a positive realization to realize you want to live, right? Yeah. Even if that means like, oh, then I need to figure out some other shit because, like, why am I still having these feelings?
Right.
Like, yeah, that's like... But part of figuring that shit out is realizing, like, I want to live. Like, that's a critical moment to have when you are struggling with suicidal ideation. So good for you.
Yeah.
Being confronting that and being confronted with it. I mean, it all has to do with, like, anyone who does attempt to take their life, that's they usually don't do it a second time. Because they've confronted that, and realized this thing that you realized. I don't know. That's a very, very positive outcome of this.
And
I've struggled with suicidal ideation at points in my life, and in fact, there was a period of time when things were particularly bad that I like bagged up all of the firearms I owned and put them in the hands of a trusted friend and said, like, I shouldn't have access to these for a while. And, you know, kind of the when I got them back and when I started to like it was after I kind of had that, like, OK, like, I actually don't want to die. There's something else going on. And I've thought about this enough to realize that primary truth. And like, that's kind of the first step towards healing what it is that healing the damage that manifests as thinking about suicide.
Right. Right. Yeah. There are a few. And just sort of along these lines, I think there are just some, a lot of people, like, I learned that my antidepressants work and things like that. And people chiming in like, same, me too.
Yay.
I just keep, in my darkest of times, I keep reminding myself that I'm going to look back on this and there are going to be positive takeaways. I'm proud of how strong we are and proud of how resilient we are. I know I've said that before, but I'm going to keep saying it because I have to remind myself. And like, this is great. This is great reinforcing positive personal work that we can do.
Yeah.
Continue.
I mean, no,
I'm
you're
sorry.
Like, that's, I mean, even simple stuff like canceling plans isn't as great as I thought it was. It turns out I like having plans. Things like that.
Yeah.
It's good to realize that and know that, like, when things get to, in quotes, back to normal, there's going to be, I think, a lot of positive moves that strengthen relationships in real life and get people out. And yeah, I don't know. I like seeing that kind of stuff.
And so many responses from people saying, like, I'm actually closer with my family now, you know, weekly Zoom calls that they didn't have that same connection with them before. When my brother passed away, I learned that. I think that times of intense tragedy and stress can bring our families closer together as well. Anyway, please, I want to hear your responses you picked out.
I mean, it's all along those sort of lines, I think, just being forced to confront things that maybe you've been avoiding and learning from that and coming out the other side better. This is from Evangeline on our Discord, and it's sort of just a list of a few things. So Evangeline says, I learned to connect with emotions I had buried. I think that's kind of on theme with what we're talking about. I learned I can trust the strength of the relationship I have built with my wife. I think a lot of people are getting that. I learned online classes are more demanding for parents than no class at all. I learned to find community and support and offer it in return as much as possible.
I love that.
And I just think all of those sort of hit a lot of what we've talked about, not just today, but in general on all of our shows.
Yeah.
And then a light joke. I learned every house should have a Nintendo Switch. It is a right.
That's a great response. Also, just a real quick plug. A lot of you don't know, we do have a Discord, and apparently there's a book club that started in our Discord. So you guys should check that out if you're part of the Patreon and all of that.
Do it.
And one last one from Barry Herbers. I learned that a good 50% of the reason I never accomplish the things I want to in my everyday life is the constant pressure to accomplish things in my everyday life and exhaustion from working. I'm making all kinds of headway in my hobbies at the moment. Learning to program. I love that. I think that's incredibly valuable takeaway to have from this that hopefully you can continue to apply once things are quote unquote normal again.
I think there's always so much pressure to do that, but there's also a lot of, I don't know, we have in general as a nation, we have a really skewed gnarled version of like what work is and means and like what accomplishment. I don't know what I'm saying. It doesn't matter. Who cares?
No, you do know. You're completely right. I think that there's so much pressure on us to go, go, go. There's also this idea of what's wrong with me if I can't focus and get this done. I'm broken, or I am not doing enough. If I ever want to succeed, I have to push harder. And then we don't stop and remember to just look up.
Yeah. And then we don't get like, and it's just like, well, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? There's no like,
what's the next
thing?
There's
no time to, and this is one of the, many things about this era. We need as human beings rest and time for community without that pressure. And I think I see a lot of it, even just like walking, like, oh, there's like a yard where like a dad's teaching his kid how to make something. Oh, there's like a family actually playing out in the yard and taking time for each other and taking time to rest. I had a friend who like, yeah, I had to take a personal day because of what's going on. So I did that because we're allowed to. And then the next day was one of the worst days of work in a long time because I had to catch up with all the stuff that I took off. So like even the rest time that we are allowed, it's all sucked away and put on the return. I don't know.
Right.
We're not great. We're not doing so hot.
Hopefully some of these lessons are ones that become maybe foundational, or at least for a while, at least we can apply them someday going forward. All right, we gotta get out of here. Robert has another thing to record.
Always.
Always.
But thank you very much for joining us, Robert.
Plug your stuff.
Thank you for having me.
I will. Yeah, plug your stuff.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I have a podcast called The Women's War, and it's about how to rebuild society when your authoritarian fascist government abandons you to religious extremists.
Very important right now and always.
Yeah. I have another podcast, but I'll leave it up to the sleuths at home to find it. You know, there's breadcrumbs buried throughout the internet. You can access it if you really try. Yeah, that's all I got.
Great.
That's a lot.
That's all I got.
I think you're doing great. I think we're all doing great.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, guys?
Very much.
I love you very much.
Much.
We love you very much.
We.
Yep.
Love.
And
much.
I'm done.